You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org. Now, troll on in.
Yeah, today's going to be like an exercise in exactly what different parts of the council do. And as I told you a little bit earlier, we're gonna revisit some folks that have been here before, that are part of a group, but they actually form their own little company to perform duties mostly for the council. And we'll have Malloy Saboteur sort of explain sort of what our whole studio full of people is. One of the neat things, Malloy, that we talked about a lot is the fact that, you know, the council reaches out into so many different areas and provides opportunities, and it really is bottoms up. And what we have with both John Wiley and Cassie is Hardy, an example of what happens when people fall into a place where there's opportunity. Explain a little bit.
Right. Good morning, Mike. So what we have here are our budding scientists, basically. Mm-hmm. So the council is involved in capacity building. And one of our younger generations that came out of the woodworks, coming from our graduate school scholarship or internship program, is Cassie and John, who now runs their own company called Poseidon Fisheries Research.
Which they got to pinch themselves, right? Because it just like happened. Right?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. but the same thing is, means that the council in its duties realizes that it has to expand where it gets its info from. In other words, it's not all generated from inside. You have some outside help.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, the council is a fishery management body, and we need scientific information to support our fishery management decisions. And we do this by, you know, getting funds to do certain research that would help stock assessments and also help, you know, understanding the dynamics of the ecosystem out there.
What I think is important to encompass, and that is that none of these things are guaranteed. And you're only as good as the last work you did for me. It's not an indication that, like, you're going to work at the shipyard for 40 years. You have to keep sharpening your pencil and keep performing.
That's right. Yeah. And you know, the challenge here is really trying to get the funds to keep the research going.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the gaps that we have here in Hawaii is having that research consortium that does research services for different groups of organization like the council, for example. And we need that arm, because council staff is tied in doing writing papers and all the amendments, while the Science Center is also doing their own
science. Somebody's got to do the science, by
but
the way. Yeah.
We need to have like this third party entity that would support the scientific needs of different groups, especially the council.
Okay, so today we are concentrating on what fraction of that, what part of that?
So we're looking at the one of the projects that we have is the Hawaii biosampling. Biosampling meaning we take biological samples from the market and also from the fishing community to extract life history information. And I'm going to shut up and let the younger generation explain.
I think is interesting in that, and let's point this out for sure before we do this and get specific of what's happening today, mm-hmm. is that this information has helped make a lot bigger decisions. Like on maybe, for instance, what about this local yellowfin tuna? Do we have our own? Do we have our own?
Population.
Yeah. Do we have our own population?
Right.
Same thing. Even with big eye. Are there Hawaiian Island big eye? You
know? Right. So the goal of the life history program is to establish the life history characteristics of the different species that we have, which could include pelagics.
Mm-hmm.
But we're focusing, since this funding comes from the Coral Reef Conservation Fund or Conservation Program, then we're focusing our efforts on coral reef fish, which is considered as data limited or data poor.
Sure.
And we don't have a full grasp on, you know, how fast does some of these species grow and, you know, how
much are we taking out of the ocean, you know? All right. Of that stuff, right?
Yeah, we know how much we're taking out of the ocean, but is the rate of our harvest the same at or can be accommodated by the life history characteristics of the different species.
Okay, let's just jump right into what this one is. Before we get into some of these species, though, first with you, John Wiley, I want to get into some really exciting stuff that's happened to really shine the light on what you and others do, and that is what's happened lately in all the decision-making based on data collected about the Kona crab, for instance. All of a sudden, look at this. What are we going to do with Kona crab? My goodness, there's a lot more than we thought there was. We can take this stuff.
Yeah, so that was kind of our first introductory project with Cassie and I starting Poseidon Fisheries Research, was that project with Kona crabs. So we were able to show that a lot of the post-release mortality, or when you catch and have to release the crabs, they're actually more able to survive than we'd previously thought. So a lot of that regulation was based off an Australian study, and they had a lot more mortality happening there.
You know, Cassie, I think one of the things was when their leg falls off, that they can make a new one. We didn't know that, did we?
Yeah, so that was something really interesting that we learned, was that it was previously thought when their leg broke off that they were just going to die.
They
couldn't seal that wound. But we found that they can actually seal the wound, and when they molt, they can actually produce a new segment of that leg.
Which is really, I mean, that's just really cool. But what I also think is neat to note, is good to know, is we're talking about which ones we're keeping. You know that we're not just catching all the Kona crabs. Like if you take a look at Deadliest Catch, when they're bringing their crabs onto the boat, they very quickly can tell size wise which ones are not going to get kept. But what about with the Kona crab, the difficulty in determining which are the female, and if we take all the males, are we changing what's down there?
Yeah, so the current regulation is that you can only keep males greater than 4 inches.
Yeah.
And so it's...
So the babies you throw back.
Babies you throw back, females you throw back.
Right.
So it's pretty easy to determine if it's a male or a female based on how they look. But what we're still trying to figure out is if you're only keeping the males and throwing back the females, is that going to hurt the population further down the line? Because you need bigger males to reproduce.
Yeah, I was
going to
say,
females.
One of the things that you don't know is, taken into consideration, when these crabs mate, the male, if he's a small male, can't do the job on a big female.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, I know it's not, you know, it's kind of scary in some ways, because if you kept doing that, you know, over a long period of time, wouldn't you indeed change the population?
Maybe.
Or could you?
You could, maybe. Yeah. What we found in our last study was that the catch population was about 50-50 male-female. So we haven't seen too much of a skew from the no keep of females yet, but maybe down the road it might change.
It would, don't you think, John? And we're not going to dwell on this a lot because we want to cover a lot of other stuff, but the fact that there was at one point in time a thought was there is no commercial fishery here. We can't, you know, it's not going to sustain something like that. Can it?
As far as the population goes, I think it can. Mm-hmm. But with the regulations right now, people are having to throw back about 80% of what they catch.
Which makes it pretty typical.
So it's a lot of effort to go out there and catch so many crabs, and you only get to come home with a few that you can eat or keep.
And by the way, just the gear alone is real different. It's kind of primitive, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a circle with a mesh net in between, and you set a bait in the middle, and then the crab walks over and gets tangled. So when you pull them up, even sometimes they'll fall off.
How many fall on the way up?
Yeah, we have. Last time we had some cameras.
How many when you get them up are too small to keep, or they're female?
So, I mean, we had some camera proof of some falling off. So, I mean, it's certainly a big effort for fishermen to go out and target specifically Kona crabs. So.
Okay, so let's, but I think it gives everybody sort of somewhat of an idea what the process is, you know, what you all are doing, why these studies become valuable, and then what decisions can be made from that. What was gratifying for you guys in what you did on the Kona crab study?
I think the biggest thing was just how fast it was used. Like, whenever you do research, obviously you want it to be important. And as soon as we were done, we were able to show our results to NOAA, and they put together a benchmark assessment, a stock assessment of the Kona crabs.
It was pretty quick, wasn't it?
Pretty quick, So it was used right away, and that was really refreshing.
Cassie, it's kind of funny, because I guess sometimes you look at, well, in a study that we did back in 2006, we found this. But there are some significant changes, right, between 2006 and 2019.
Yeah, it was quite interesting, because while we were finishing up our study, we actually had people from NOAA emailing us going, where's the results? We need them right now. So it was hot off the presses, straight to them and right into this.
Was it a good way to get you guys' feet wet in this? Did you figure out a lot?
Yeah, we figured out a lot of how to work with the fishing community. Mm-hmm. We got a lot of new contacts in the fishing community and people on different islands and stuff. So it was good for us to get integrated.
Okay, John, let's talk a little bit about what Marlo Sabater was mentioning a little bit ago, and that was, you know, the current project. When we talk about doing the sorts of assessment and research you're doing, what's going on right now with what you're doing on the inshore population, inshore fish?
Yeah, so with the reef species, first and foremost, with the biosampling, we're going out to and sampling in all the local markets.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever we see local species, we identify them down to the species level and then get a length weight measurement on those species. So we're working with a few markets on Oahu right now over the past year.
Are they cooperative mostly?
Yeah, they've been cooperative, letting us come in about once a week. You might have seen us out there measuring fish.
Yeah.
It's great for us to be out there in the community, and we can talk to people who kind of look at us and like, what are they doing?
And then we kind of
engage with them. So that's really refreshing just to be able to share the importance of this work with them.
You know, in most places, you know, you take what you need, or you're supposed to take what you need and save the rest. But I'm gonna guess that the biosampling, what is sort of the sum of the data that it will provide? What's it used for?
So beyond the market sampling itself, we actually take samples back. We'll purchase samples directly from the markets, or sometimes we'll get fishermen to donate samples to us. So we'll be out at tournaments getting samples.
Mm-hmm.
And so we take out the otoliths. So it's the inner ear bone of the fish.
This is the part that's really cool.
So we're able to take these otoliths back to our lab and grind them down into a really thin cross section. And then each year the fish puts down annual growth rings, and we can count those rings similar to a tree ring. And we can figure out how old the fish is. So if you put the age of the fish and the length of the fish together, we can get a growth curve and figure out how fast those fish are growing.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that prior to this kind of study, Cassie, that the information, number one, wasn't available. And number two, probably a lot of bad science came out of some of the research that was done before learning these things.
Yeah, so the purpose of the market sampling is because a lot of the commercial catch data, it just tells you the total pounds caught not the average size or not the size of each fish. So in the market, we get to get the size of each fish and we can get a size curve where we don't see that in the commercial catch data, which is really important.
Doesn't it depend on some of the fishermen where they're fishing? They might come in, let's say, with mempachi that are, you know, anywhere from 3 inches to 12 inches. I mean, you know, they're going to catch what they're going to catch, right?
Yeah, so they'll come in, and in their commercial record, they'll say, maybe I caught 25 pounds and I caught 10 pieces. And so you would just get an average.
Two and a half, you think.
So you just get an average weight. Whereas if we go to the market, we can get the exact weight and length of all these fish. And that's going to be helpful for future stock assessments of these
coral.
It
really is hard for somebody listening as a fisher person to say, well, why don't I throw this guy back? Because next year he'll be, you know, 6 inches bigger and the taste of your fish. Because I think once we catch him, right?
Sometimes, but if you put them back, a lot of times with fish, when they get bigger, they actually produce more and more eggs.
Yeah.
Actually, exponentially more as fish get bigger. So the bigger fish that you catch and are able to release, they're having a bigger impact on the fishing population.
And that's hard for some people to really process, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes.
You know, I remember back in the day, my late buddy Mike Sakamoto used to always kiss these papillo and put them back in the water. And I'm thinking, most people take that puppy and put it right on the stove because it was the perfect size to eat. Okay, how do you fold young people in? I want to meet our interns here. Tell us a little bit how you work with people at HPU and others to get help for your jobs.
So with the biosampling especially, we needed some extra hands in the lab to take care of all the samples. So we used our HPU connection and reached out to some of our old professors to find some help for us, and we're lucky enough to get a couple interns here. We have Taylor Fendrick and Joe Giglio, who've been helping us out for about a year now. And so we've trained them in the lab and also in the market sampling.
Okay, just out of curiosity, Joe, what is the field? What were you studying? What did you get your degree in?
So I did my undergrad at HPU, and I was doing marine biology, and then I continued into my master's and was studying marine science.
To what end? I mean, you know, a lot of times people say, you became a master, you became a doctorate of what? What was the idea? How are you going to use it? Did your parents wonder that?
Did my parents what?
Did your parents wonder, what are you doing? What is this? Where is this going to take you?
Well, yeah, I'm originally from Colorado, so when you move to rock in the middle
of the ocean. Yeah, and you move into the salt water, it's a learning curve, yeah.
But
got you interested?
I always wanted to work with the ocean, mm-hmm. and I was really passionate just about like the environment. Mm-hmm. And I think Hawaii is a great place to learn about the ocean and then also practice science here.
You know, with the number of people here, is it sometimes alarming? You say, hey, you folks, you better watch out. This place where you are is threatened. Some places are threatened.
Yeah, some places are threatened, yeah.
What about you, Taylor? What got you into this shooting match?
So I graduated
Let's get you right in there. Move in a little closer for me. You graduated?
I graduated in May and got my bachelor's in marine biology.
What was, where are you from?
I'm from California originally.
Okay, so you're a beach person already.
Yes, yeah. I've always loved
it. And at what point, where did you start thinking this is what you want to do, marine biology?
So I actually went to high school in Hawaii. I went to Kapolei High School for 3 years, and I just fell in love with Hawaii. And I went back to California for senior year of high school and decided that I wanted to come back out here for college and study marine biology in the best place you can.
Yeah, you know, that being said, we really get a kick out of this because I've had the opportunity over the decades that I've been doing the show to talk to lots and lots of young people and thinking, thank goodness that there are young people still coming up the food chain that want to do these things. Did you come from a supportive background, your parents and stuff?
Oh, yeah. My parents have always been extremely supportive. They love that I came out here and they're really, really proud of me.
When John, when you talk about, you know, getting with a large amount of work that needs to be done, and hence, you know, Joe and Taylor got brought in. What was the intent? What are they doing?
So they're helping us with the market surveys. So they're out taking biological samples with us in the markets, and then in the lab we've been training them to do all the life history work with us, so they can analyze and prepare the otoliths and the gonads to figure out when they're reproducing.
Yeah. So interestingly enough, when you're doing the stuff that you're doing, Joe, are there kids and stuff around that are sometimes trying to? What are you guys doing, or what happens like when you're in a market and doing some stuff? Do they ask you what you're doing?
Yeah, definitely. When we show up in markets, which are typically like majority like Filipino or local based communities, we're the only white people there. We have these big boards and gloves, and we're just touching all the fish. And so people just come up and a lot of times they don't ask any questions, but we tell them anyways.
That's great.
Because they come really close and they're interested. They are, but sometimes you have to make the first move.
You know, and not every market is like the auction or like Tomashiro. Some of these are kind of small places, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And it's same thing, Taylor, for you. I'm curious as to what your impression. You know what you're going to do, and now you're going to go do it. Is it like the customer or the people that are watching you are like hungry birds in a nest? They want to know, well, what are you doing? What are you guys doing with this stuff?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. We're always being watched by somebody and, you know.
What is the actual physical inspection? I mean, obviously, you're going to take cameras and do measurements. Sometimes you're going to take the fish with you and bring them back?
Yeah, we take the fish sometimes and we take them back to the lab and we're able to extract the samples that we need there. The ear bones and the gonads.
You know, the thing that I get a kick out of, and I think it was way back, Cassie, when I met you guys in the very beginning, is that, you know, what you're doing is just like matter of fact, but who, for instance, discovered this otolisk in the first place is that this is this. Don't ask why, just believe this is what it is. How does that work?
Yeah, I wonder that all the time. I don't know who discovered these ear bones because they're like deep in the brain cavity and they're very, very small, like smaller than the size of your pinky nail.
Yeah.
So I don't know who discovered them, and I don't know how they determined if you grind them down very thin.
Yeah, I mean, you have to have this leap of faith in that, right?
But whoever did found out that these fish put down annual rings just like a tree ring.
It's amazing.
And now it's a really useful technique for aging these fish.
I can tell you, I saw this thing on the Sequoia Forest And it was so fascinating because they were talking about the age of this tree and the age of that tree, and it was like unbelievable. I got to ask you the same question, because obviously you take this big leap of faith in what is what is. I liken it to this. Who discovered artichokes and decided we're going to eat this? I mean, what's all of this fuzzy stuff that's prickly in my mouth? In other words, you got to get through all of that stuff, right?
Yeah, I guess it's a little bit of trial and error. Yeah. A lot of people have tried with scales or other hard structures on fish, and otoliths have just proved to be the most useful and the most consistent bone to go after. And there's been some validation studies to confirm that it's actually growth rings.
If you take a look at a thing like a nautilus shell or something, aren't there other things out there that have a similar way to manage or to guess and guesstimate age, size, sex, all that stuff?
I mean, yeah, obviously if it's bigger, you know, it's a little bit older, right? Yeah. So it's just having a way to show what those increments are to be able to count and be a little confident in your estimates.
When you started off to do this project, I should have asked Malloy this when we first started, or Marlo, and that was what we need to do, and Marlo, let's get you back in here for a minute, because I want to make sure that people know that what you're doing is not random. In other words, you have a method here. What were the species that you had intended to study, and what did they end up doing for you?
So the species that we're targeting right now are the coral reef species that was assessed by the Science Center in 2016, I believe. Mm-hmm. Based on that stock assessment, there were some life history gaps that needs mm-hmm. to be addressed. And what they did in the assessment was to simulate the life history characteristics of some of these species.
Okay.
And now we're collecting hard data to kind of fill up that gap. So it's still going to feed into stock assessments.
Okay. Now, what's going to be of interest to the audience is, okay, we jumped in the water and there's a reef full of fish. What are the ones that we're looking for here? Cassie, let's go back to you. When we talk about specific species, are we looking at Kumu? Are we looking at Palani? What are we looking at?
Yeah, so currently our main focus is the four large Palani species.
Mm-hmm.
And we are also starting to look at the Mu, the table boss, and then we're getting a lot of samples of the different Omilu and Papio at the different tournaments. So
yeah, because you're not going to find the Palani and the Mu and the table boss necessarily at tournaments. I mean, I'm sure you are, but they're looking for Ulua, they're looking for Papio.
Yeah.
And so I don't even think that I don't know the answer. And you know, I know we're gonna get Zach in here in a minute to talk about this also, but I don't know when you start talking about, you know, which species you should concentrate on. Tell me, is it availability or all of the above? What is it?
A little bit of all the above. The availability with the Palani was for sure. It made it easy for us to start out with the Palani just because they're so prevalent in the markets and easy for us to access.
Yeah, and they're not too hard to catch.
Although right now we have a very market specific sampling size, so mm-hmm. we kind of have that midsection. Now we're focusing on getting the really small fish and the really large fish. So the tournaments help us with the really large fish, mm-hmm. and we've been starting to go out fishing by ourselves or with other fishing groups around Oahu to try and catch the
real
small
ones. Yeah, and by the way, every now and again, if you go to wpcouncil.org, when they are out looking for help, we should talk this a lot because, you know, you go to the website, you can see the results of these studies and whatnot, but you can also see the opportunities. And I don't think that it would be possible to do what you all do if it weren't for the cooperation of a lot of these small boat skippers and these guys that will take you out fishing.
Absolutely. The fishing community has been really great. Whenever we're in the tournaments, we always get a lot of people coming up and just talking story with us about how they fish and where they're fishing, what they're catching, and what we're doing. So it's really great to engage.
You know what I want to do? I've been really remiss. I wanted to get Zach Yamada in here earlier and talk about it because he is a contractor to the council now. And I think that it's been a while. Zach, what is it that you are doing or what are you doing in this project?
So with this project, I pretty much helped bridge that gap for the community as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a really good grasp on the markets, and what I do is I actually go out into the community.
I was going to say, you're going to be the point guy, right? You're going to go out and you're going to go talk to this guy fishing on the reef to ask to look at his catch.
I mean, it is an advantage that I'm a local boy from Maui, so it's like, I have no shame in asking anybody for anything, because it's like, they would do it the same. I would expect it the kind of the way back. So pretty much what I do is, I'll see if there's a tournament going on or something around, along those lines, and I'll call them up and I'll go, "Hey, this is Zach. I've been working with the fish, this research group, and we're actually interested in putting like a booth at you guys' tournament."
Mm-hmm.
And then I pretty much give them the gist of what we're doing at the tournaments, and then we go, it's like, either you can say yes or you can say no.
Yeah, and I want to make sure that there's no pressure here.
Yeah.
But what you really need to do is impress upon those of you that are listening that are going to do little tournaments and stuff. I do know the trolling tournaments, we have no problem dealing with those guys all the time because they expect it. And they're proud of it. But there's some guys that they don't want to be bothered, right? Because they're fishing. And they're competing. But when the competition part is over, is it easier then at the weigh-ins or after that to say, "We want your fish"?
So the hardest part that we actually have with the tournaments is, like, say for instance, when we go to like these Ulua tournaments, the hardest part is when we actually run into these big fish that we really want. A lot of the people want to keep the fish because they want to print it. So that's
Gyotaku is alive and well, and we're losing research because of it, maybe a little bit, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like like a shot in the toe kind of thing. But like, we've actually had the luxury of having the biggest one we've had was a 75-pound ulua,
which is really getting there. Everybody's looking for the 100-pound ulua. Everybody knows that. Just like every marlin guy is looking for the grander, but still that big fish. Can they have their cake and eat it too? I mean, are there some things you can do with it where they end up getting it back?
Yeah, so pretty much what they get out of us taking their fish is they get a clean fish. The brain might be missing, but I mean, most part, the filet is there, the meat is there, and they don't have to even deal with the guts. I mean, granted, we don't scale the fish, but the guts are out, and that's half the battle. You don't have to keep it in your trash can for a week.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, but I mean, and you know what? I know that sometimes it's a laugh a minute and it's fun along the way, but I think maybe once you can convince somebody, maybe the tournament director or whatnot, that this is very valuable research, that having the opportunity to work with these guys is a blessing, isn't it?
Yeah. So sometimes, like, when we go to tournaments, since we're targeting the Palani, Pualu, and some of these other fish, a lot of people don't like to keep their fish.
Yeah.
So say for instance, since we moved the project to Maui, we've actually had this connection with a farm called the Maui Farm, and they actually take all of our fish, the fish that we can't use, they take the fish and actually use it as fertilizer. So we're getting a point where it's not like everything's going into the trash. We're figuring there's a plan for all of this.
Going forward now, let's go, John, back into where we are. And by the way, this is a two-parter. Next week we're going to be having part two of the discussion we're having today, because in a little bit we're going to run out of time. One of the things that we need to find out is what's next. I mean, where is this project right now, and where's it going?
So at this point we've been sampling for about a year on Oahu. So we're transitioning from Oahu markets to Maui markets. Okay. So kind of like Zach was mentioning, the past month or so we've been training a couple students from UH out there to help us out. And we've been we went to a tournament out there, three-prong, was it the dad and son tournament out there?
Yeah, that's great,
So it was great to kind of get that foothold in Maui so we can start collecting samples out there and show if there's a difference between the two islands.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that, because now that you've been doing what you've been doing for a while, you and Cassie, is there a difference?
There very likely can be. It's been shown even in different parts of one island, you can have different
growth rates. Yeah, I was going to say that if you take, say, the North Shore of Molokai, which is not inhabited, and it's rough water, there's a lot of fish there. And you go to the other side, where the ponds are and the water is stiller, not as many or as big.
Yeah. I mean, those even small distance can create large differences in the actual habitat, so you can get differences in the growth rates. And so it'll be interesting to see if there's a unique fish population between the two islands as far as those life history traits.
You know, when you were talking about earlier, the Palani and the Mu particularly, I don't know if you're out there listening, if you haven't eaten Mu, there's something wrong with you, because it's seriously really a good fish.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, it really is. and I'm not sure as how plentiful there are. In some areas, when you go to like where there's strong surge or reef, and you can see them in the reef, I guess foraging for the little things that the swells kick up. What do they eat?
So a lot of the Mu eat the urchins that are around, or the crabs. A lot of times in the stomachs, we see like really the hard shell pieces of those urchins and the crabs that haven't quite digested yet.
Is that right?
Yeah. So it's pretty interesting to see.
Do you see big ones? I haven't seen a big Mu for
big
a long
Mu.
Time.
Yeah, we've had a few big ones.
Yeah. How much of this is one of the things you said, which is really important, is the speed at which some of the results of some of the research that you're doing now gets used.
Yeah, so that's
why is that? Are they just because they're waiting for your info?
It takes a little while to process everything, and you need the whole spectrum of all of the sizes. So yeah, it's going to take a little bit for us to finish and finalize all of our results. But the council works really well with us to be able to utilize those results in their management.
Let's talk about that. Obviously, the management part is good, but what about actually finding some of the stuff, Malloy? If you go to the council website, wpcouncil.org, where can you go search to go find out about what we're talking about?
So normally we put in the final reports from some of these projects into our website. So there's a publication page on our website where you can download some of these some of the reports that we
Yeah, because you know, one of the things you and I talked about before is the increasing number of teachers that are now coming to the council or going to the website and saying, you know what, I got a lesson plan here. I mean, there's curriculum right here.
Right. So there are going to be some information. The techniques that these guys have been using are used everywhere else. Yeah. And you know, it would be interesting for kids to learn, you know, that you can count the growth of fishes through this ear bones.
Yeah.
And that's probably something fascinating that the kids could start learning at an early age.
Now, you know, we could ask the gang that's here about that, but let's talk about you're a little bit longer in the tooth than some of the others. When did that information first become available to you? Did you think about these rings earlier?
I encountered this line of work when I was doing my master's level studies as well.
Mm-hmm.
So some people like just go diving and count fish. Some people like to get their hands slimy with fish slime. So I've actually engaged in this type of research a long time ago. Like 25 years
ago. Yeah, I was going to say a quarter of a century ago. I mean, but that's the way, actually it's the way it is, right? But what I'm talking about is, and maybe it would actually be for Cassie or for John on that, and that is, what are we looking for as far as how technology has changed or how the science of what you're doing has changed by technology? By the equipment that you use, by the storage facilities, by the cloud, nothing's in writing anymore. It's all in some digital file somewhere.
Yeah. So for the otoliths, at least, we're pretty low tech on how we grind our otoliths. We grind them with a jeweler's wheel. Okay. How they grind like diamonds and stuff. That's how we grind down our otoliths. So that's pretty.
Yeah. Really. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's pretty low tech, but a lot of the validation techniques that other scientists have used have been like bomb radiocarbon dating and things like that, which are a lot more high tech, but we don't really use those things.
Okay, you know what? We're going to, when we come back next week, we're going to talk about this some more. In the meantime, if you want to hear something on the program, you know what to do. You're going to write us either an email or send something to me, either themikebuckshow@gmail.com. Or get onto the council website and get that information we're talking about. Go look at some of these developments. And remember, if you want to hear something, just suggest that we do it that way. So we'll be back again next week with part two of this discussion that we're talking about. Doing the research and doing the biosampling that's done. What for? Yeah. Okay. So we'll see you next time. Have a good rest of your weekend.